والله عجيب.
Evening, everyone. I want to welcome you to tonight's February 10th, 2025 regular city council meeting. You'd all please rise for a short private invocation. Asking for top left comment to be complimented. Now, if we join me in the private allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I want to welcome everyone and move right to the public input portion of this city council meeting, and that's item 1D. Is there anyone present who would like to address the city council? Please raise your hand and I'll allow you up to 5 minutes. And note all the council members are present, except for Councilman Angel Garza. He asked to be excused tonight, so I'd entertain a motion to excuse Councilman Angel Garza.
I'll make a motion to excuse Angel.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to the approval of tonight's agenda.
I'll make the motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move to our consent agenda.
I'll make the motion to approve the consent agenda.
Okay. Second.
Made by Corey, seconded by John. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next portion of our council meeting is the current business. And tonight, the first item A is approving a contract with McKinstry for City Hall HVAC system. Trying to look for my term I'm looking for. For an energy audit. Tonight we have with us Sean Pelfrey from McKinstry, Luke Cashman, and Christy Hoffpower. Is that pronounced right, Christy? Okay. And I want to briefly, we had a committee meeting about this last week. I know, since the initial installation of the HVAC system here at City Hall in 1995, the system was not properly designed for a community of Othello's extreme temperature swings, both cold and hot. And the system was never actually really completed. And we have spent, as a city council, over the last 10 years, a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of freezing in here. And it doesn't seem to matter if it's 100 degrees or whether it's 0 degrees. And so we're constantly running space heaters and other things, and which are a potential fire hazard. I do want to thank the Public Works Department, though, that they have had guys come in over the weekend to make sure that the system has continued to be warm, at least so that we're not freezing when we walk in on Monday morning. And so it's on that backdrop that I'm going to turn this, the rest of this over to Sean, Luke, and Christy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate the time tonight to meet with all of y'all. Thanks for having us down here. My name is Sean Pelfrey. I am the account executive for McKinstry, working with municipalities in Eastern Washington on energy projects. I also have with me Christy Hoffpower, who is my district manager, and Luke Cashman, who is our project developer. So tonight we're here to ask the City Council to approve a contract between the City of Othello and McKinstry to perform to move forward with a investment grade audit here on City Hall. And I'd like to kind of go over some kind of word there, what that means, where we're at, and how we got to where we are currently. Most of you are probably very familiar with the traditional design, bid, build portion of construction. The state of Washington has an allowance that allows alternative procurement with design build, where performance is a key factor. And McKinstry, we are a design build company. Our process is a little bit different than what you're traditionally used to for, because we not only design the project, but then we also go into the construction part of it. It removes a lot of the obstacles it removes a lot of the obstacles that you would normally face in a traditional design bid build practice. Design build allows for the focus on the outcome and the performance rather than having to accept the lowest bid. And design build provides a performance guarantee on the equipment that we're installing. So during the process, we talk about an investment grade audit, which is what we're looking at, we're talking about tonight. And what that is that allows us to come in and go to about 30 to 50% design on a system, and allows us to get to what we call a guaranteed maximum price, or a GMAX price of the project, and a guaranteed savings, so that we can go in and say, this is what the project's gonna cost completely, and we guarantee that aspect of it. So if I tell you it's X amount of dollars and it comes over that amount of money and there's no reason for it to have done that, then we take the liability on the overcharge of it. It also allows us to give you guys a guaranteed energy savings. So when we take a look at your entire building and how the building works, how it's worked in the past, and we take a look at all your historical data on that, and then we take a year later, we come back and compare the notes. We said we're going to save you X amount of dollars on energy savings. That's the way we can verify that. How we got here. Met with Mayor Logan last year. We had some discussions. He said he was expresses the discomfort that the staff had in the building, kind of where things were at. Wanted to know if we could help them out. So we'd be happy to. I met with the mayor and Robin. We had a long discussion. They decided that they would like to move forward with McKinstry using what is known as the Interlocal Purchasing Cooperative, also known as TIPS. And TIPS is an entity that allows public entities to directly select an ESCO. It's using cooperative purchasing. And it's based on an RCW within the state of Washington to do that. So you do not have to go out for bid. Luke and I came down here. Luke was able to do a preliminary assessment, walk the entire facility with Chon Salguero. Right? Is that right? Huh? Oh, dang, I knew I was going to mess it up. That's right. From the Public Works Department. To really get an understanding of a lot of the issues that the building was facing, and some of the band-aids that have been placed on the system over the year to keep it running and up and going. I have to give the Public Works Department a lot of credit for the work that they put in to keep things going here. And now we get to, oh, I'm sorry, Mayor, go ahead and you can flip the next slide. Sorry. that's how we got the ESCO selection, the preliminary assessment. And right now we're at the investment grade audit aspect of it. So again, the investment grade audit, as we discussed earlier, will take us to 30% to 50% design, allow us to walk contractors and be able to really create a solution for the city. And I'm gonna let Luke talk for a few minutes about really kind of what goes involved with the investment grade audit.
Okay.
Thanks, Luke.
So hi, my name is Luke. I'm a mechanical engineer by trade for a number of years, and then decided to want to work more with people. And so I started as a developer. And so I would be your primary contact during the investment grade audit, where we get to that 30, 50% design. Having taken a walk through the building, I see a lot of equipment that is either approaching its end of life or it's there. I do see a good system. The basis is there for sure. It is a bit confusing why it doesn't work as it should be. And so some of the first steps would be, let's just gather some more information. I would like to get a tab contractor out here to kind of take actual measurements of this size duct is doing this much airflow. You know, this size pipe, we're actually seeing this much GPM, this much flow rate through that pipe, you know, at this terminal box over, like, say, the offices. Or we're seeing absolutely no flow, you know, and compare that to what was the initial design, see how it's actually running today. Also get a water quality analysis testing done. You obviously have people who fill up your glycol antifreeze in the system. Have them take a water sample, send it out to a lab, and see what's happening with the pipes. Is it degrading faster than it should be? You already have a side stream filter in the water loop. It does seem to be packing up a little bit faster than maybe it should be, but maybe there's a bigger problem there. And the idea is to gather some information before I even bring engineers out so that we can look at how is it running today? How is it supposed to be running? And then bring out the mechanical engineers, the electrical engineer, and really take a deeper dive, look into things in kind of an all-day site visit where we can actually hone in on some things, with the idea being that we can go for, you know, good, better, best. We can look at some potential solutions to this problem. And most importantly, when the designers go into that, you know, actual, okay, when they're going to start creating those design documents, getting to that 50% design, they have a very strong idea of, you know, this duct main is sized appropriately. There's no reason to just tear it out versus it would be very, the easy button is to say tear everything out and put in all new, but it probably doesn't make any sense. So if there's huge chunks where we can keep it, let's keep it. If it comes to light that there's a relatively simple solution, then great. We'll present to you that relatively simple solution with some cost guarantees there. And this would be over the course of a couple of months with numerous meetings at specific times when I have information to actually have a discussion with the right people in your city, with Robin, for example, to make sure that when we are moving forward with like the next steps, we're doing so in a way that you agree with, that you understand what we're doing, that you have input. There's a nice feedback loop during the whole process. And so it's not just, I used to work in the design bid build world and it was fine, but it wasn't very much of a partnership. It wasn't very much of a, it was, you signed your contract and then you didn't hear from us for a long time until we showed you a design that was way too expensive. And then there was, or it would go out to bid and lowest bid would win. And it was never actually going to cost what they said it was going to cost. And I got really frustrated with that, which is why I work here at McKinstry now. And so I really like the way that we're approaching this. I really like who I've had to work with your city already. And I'm really looking forward to this project because you do have some really good, strong building blocks here. And I think we can work together to identify some key ways to make it work the way it's supposed to, as well as give you, you know, budget planning for, let's say the chiller is running today, but, you know, at some point it's going to go, here's what, you know, you can anticipate for when it does reach end of life, and you can plan around that in the future. So those are some key things, and I'll let you take it away from the ESB.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it. So once we get through the investment of grade audit, what we would then bring to the city would be an ESP, which is an energy service proposal. That is really kind of the basis for the construction project. It gives you detailed scope of work and what we're planning on doing. It provides you a guaranteed maximum price, what we call the GMAX price, what we already talked about. And then it also gives you the guaranteed energy savings. At that point, the city has a decision to make depending on the cost of the system. If the city just says, hey, this meets all of our needs and we want to move forward with it, that's fantastic. Then the cost of the investment grade audit then rolls into that project, and it's something that you don't have to worry about anymore. If the city goes, hey, we really appreciate all the work you put into it, it meets all our needs, but right now we just can't finance, the budgeting isn't there, the funding that we thought we might be able to achieve isn't there, we're gonna have to push this out. And then the city would then be liable at that point for the cost of the IGA, which is outlined in the proposal. You know, the city's given us some parameters on the for the ESP. You know, they said this is what we need, this is the things that we want. We try to stay within all those parameters, meet the needs, meet the budget, follow all that stuff. Really working in a partnership with the city. Everything that we do is basically is an extension of Robin's office to create a solution for you guys. I understand that you guys have been putting Band-Aids on this for years. We'd like to help you not have to buy any more Band-Aids. So at the end of all this, after we get through the final design and construction, having moved forward, we get to the what's called the M&V, or the measurement and verification stage. For 1 year, we monitor the system, we take a look, we come back and we take the readings from all the energy usage in the previous year, make sure that the system is working properly the way that we said it would work, and it's meet all the performance guarantees that we've given you at that point. And at that point, we turn it over to the city, and it's all yours. Any questions?
Council.
So the right there in the center investment grade audit, 30 to 50% design. Mm-hmm. What is the 30 to 50% design?
So the 30 to 50% design, and Luke can smack me and push me out of the way if I'm wrong on this part of it. The design goes into it and takes a look at equipment, gets pricing, gets contractor pricing, understands, comes up with the design that meets the requirements. It's going to let us know what the guaranteed max price on this is. So we already have identified the boiler, the air handler unit, the piping, the stuff, that part all goes into it. Then once the city says, yes, we like this, move forward, then we take it all to full design. Then we actually goes to the nuts and the bolts and the wiring and all that, the other aspect of it. But that's already included in that, the price is already there.
They're given a quote after that 30 to 50%.
Yes. So that 30 to 50% allows us to take it to GMAX. It gives us enough information using all of our information, all our engineering and all our supply chain to get all the pricing and stuff, and gives us enough information to give you what the price of the project will be.
So we have a boiler for heating. Is it natural gas fired? Okay, what are the current laws in the state of Washington for redoing a whole new system with natural gas?
So my understanding is that for the climate zone that we are in, the latest code change is that you already have natural gas, and the cost to go all electric would, if the cost to go all electric is more than the cost to just stay on natural gas, they will not force you to go to electric. So there is a slight if-then statement. However, for what you're looking at, I'm assuming that you would be stay on natural gas. So that is one thing that we would be able to help you. Our engineers can dig into that, which is why we want to get under this contract, and we can actually answer that question and early on in the development and work that into the discussions, the back and forth, and let you know what's coming up ahead. There is that slight if-then statement that I can't stand here right here today and tell you exactly how to interpret it, but our mechanical engineers can do that because they do this all day, every day.
Okay.
So the city council, what the city is looking at is using our budget, our 2025 budget, and that was using ARPA funds, the last of our ARPA funds, most of the last of it. We're looking for McKinstry to perform an investment grade energy audit. In order to qualify for grants, you have to have an energy audit. So this is going to perform that energy audit. If the city, so you're only committing to the energy audit price. If the city moves ahead with the project after finding out what it's going to cost to complete it or to pay for the solution for our heating and cooling system, that money will then be rolled into the project. And so then McKinstry will not charge the city for it if we move forward with the project. If we don't move forward with the project, we will pay them the $83,520, which is the cost. Let me just see that. Did I put that on here?
Mm-hmm. It's in there.
Anyway, the cost of the energy audit, investment grade energy audit, is $83,520. So that's underneath what we have budgeted. Robin and I talked about it. We also talked about it in the committee. I think we decided that it was time to get a solution instead of abandoning again. So the committee unanimously agreed to move forward. And so unless there's more questions or any objections, I'd entertain a motion to move forward with this.
So the ARPA funds, I thought we used all that for fire.
Yeah, this is definitely, it'll be in the general fund. We've already budgeted.
Yeah.
I'll make the motion to approve a contract for an investment grade audit for $83,520.
Second that.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. All right. Sean,
thank you very much. Look forward to working with you guys on this and hopefully getting you a system that makes everybody happy.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda, 4B, is an approval of a facility use agreement between the city, the Holiday Committee, Easter Egg Hunt. Tonight we have the pleasure of our Park and Rec coordinator, Valerie Hernandez, is here to have that discussion with the city council. Valerie.
Good evening. The Othello Holiday Committee requests to use Lions Complex for their second Easter Egg Hunt. The event will take place on Saturday, April 19th from 2 to 5 p.m. to put forth a family-friendly event. This year's event will feature bounce houses, food vendors, face painting, and a prize market. Set up for the activity at Lions Complex will take place the evening before the event from 1 to 5 p.m. Takedown and cleanup will take place immediately after the Easter egg hunt. The estimated attendance will be 500 people. The committee has scheduled to have their own around 18 to 24 staff volunteers to help them out. That's doubled what they had last year. That would suggest they didn't need to have Public Works set up and do things that day. So they'll have their own staff there for their cleanup. The budget would be their special event fees of $140.25. They did have additional requested items, such as I believe it was garbage cans and picnic tables. And that came out to an additional $51. Their damage deposit will be $530.50. They requested to use the announcer booth with a damage deposit of $510, totaling $1,231.75. The staff recommends City Council approve the use of the property for the Holiday Committee Easter egg hunt and the facility use agreement. So we would need a motion to approve that. Do you have any questions? Spencer, can we bring up the map? Because this year they are using the same facility, but I want to. This year they're planning to use our what I call our championship field. It's one of our main field to have their a few more attractions. Last year it was put together, it was a quick idea. And this year they, with the amount of people that came out, they decided they'd like to make it a little bit longer event. The Easter egg hunt last year came and went really fast. So they thought they'd have some things for the kids to do this time and keep families there and also alternate their taking turns with the Easter egg hunt. So it's inclusive for elementary students. In addition, it also has an area for the special needs and walking toddlers also.
Yeah, so it's a great event. Surprising how fast it went.
Yes, yeah.
And she said, oh, it's like a vacuum cleaner of all the eggs.
Yes, it was really fast.
I remember doing this event.
Yeah. 1,000 eggs, so they're really shooting to have 3 times as many. So we'll see how that works out.
You're doing 18,000 eggs this year?
Wow.
Their target wasn't, she said, our target is 50,000. So
awesome.
They're getting there. And families are coming in and donating. You got Walmart bringing in stuff. So it's really exciting. So,
real eggs?
Yeah.
I was going to say, you're not going to find
them. Oh, no, not real eggs. Those are expensive.
Unless somebody's making them in their backyard.
Questions, Council?
So all but $191.25 is going to be refunded through the deposits.
Yes. Yeah. So deposits will be, it'll be those two. So one for the announcer booth and then the original damage deposit.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion to approve the facility use agreement authorizing the use of city property between the City of Othello and the Holiday Committee for an Easter egg hunt on Saturday, April 19th, 2025.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to item 4C, which is approving agreement for animal control services with Hands and Paws. Tonight we have with us Carmen Dirty, the president of Hands and Paws Animal Assistance, and they have provided these services for the last year, and that agreement expires on March 1st. Made an offer to them to continue their services. We're pleased with how they're running their operation. We're pleased with the direction that they're taking it. In working with our police chief, Dave Rim, and we have in front of the council a They approved in the 2025 budget $75,000 for the contract for services. Next year, it would be in this five-year contract, it would be $80,000 for 26, $85,000 for 2027, and $90,000 each for years 2028 and 2029. Basically, the provisions of the contract remain the same. There were a few minor changes, but those were really wording changes. And also, I want the council to be reminded that we budgeted $350,000 in the 2025 budget for a new shelter. And we have a temporary solution, which City Council approved at the Public Works 2 shop building, where temporary housing of animals continues until we get the new quarters set up. Armin is anxious and ready for us to get those new quarters ready. Also, I forgot to mention Heather Miller. She's also helped us with that. And Heather, as a reminder, the city does the dog pickup. And Hands and Paws performs the animal shelter service. So that is going to remain unchanged. And Carmen, do you have anything you want to add tonight?
There we go. Hi, thank you. I just wanted to give you some more updated numbers. We 100% believe in transparency. I wanted to let you know so far from March 1st of last year to the end of January of this year, we've taken in 104 animals through animal control. We've adopted out 45 of those. We very happily returned 30 of them back to their owners. We found other organizations to take 19 of them. We did have four of them that we did euthanize based on RCW code.
Dangerous dogs.
How many?
Dangerous dogs.
Four. Yes. Four.
And we've also added an additional four kennels to what was out there because you graciously allowed us to use the bay, which is very much appreciated by the staff and the animals. And I would love to answer any questions that you might have.
Council.
I don't have any questions, but I do have some statements I'd like to make on this contract. First of all, I'd like to see it go to a two-year contract rather than a five-year contract. And here's the reason why. And I don't have your new numbers that you just gave tonight, but off the report that you gave in November, there was 86 dogs taken in a year and a half. Means we're paying $1,250 per dog for care. That's less than five dogs a month that's being taken care of, and like I said, $1,250 a month, $1,250 per dog. The other things is there's a couple things in the contract here, and something in the agenda memo that I couldn't find in the contract. Maybe I just didn't see it. But it says after 10 days that Hands and Paws can take that dog and send it back to the city. It's not our problem, it's your guys' problem. Not worded like that, but that's what it says. And I don't know why that would be acceptable that once the animals is turned over to Hands and Paws, it should be their responsibility. you know, if they can't adopt it out or they can't, if it's not adoptable, it shouldn't be sent back to the city to become the city's problem. That's why we're paying that $1,250 for. The other thing is, there's a clause in the contract that says Hands and Paws will have sole discretion of costs and fees to the public. That should never be in there. That on a fee schedule where we're dealing with people's animals, and that fee schedule should be a set schedule and should be determined by the city. But the 2 year, the reason I like to see it go to the 2 year contract is we got to do something, because this just, everybody here, everybody in this room knows we're not going to build an animal shelter for $350,000. That's a down payment. So if we can't get something done in 2 years, we need to come up with another solution. I think that $75,000 to $90,000 for, and I don't mean to make it sound very small what you're doing, but basically you're feeding the dogs, right?
Feeding, providing medical care.
So
finding dispositions.
That's a lot of dogs. That's a lot of money for 85 dogs a year.
I do have one question, if you don't mind my interruption.
Mm-hmm.
That report that you got in November
mm-hmm.
was from March to the end of October for last year.
Correct. That's a year and a half.
No, just...
Oh, I'm right there. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I really apologize. I read that as 23 to 24. That's a year and a half. So my numbers are completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So we can take that away. But the other things that I've mentioned about the fee schedule, and what does that work out to? So that brings it down to about $400 a dog, which is probably pretty acceptable. I don't see it.
And on the fee schedule, we're turning the dogs over to them for them to adopt out. And so we're once they go to Hands and Paws, it's no longer our.
But if they're going to return the dogs, if they're going to hold those dogs and then send them back, we need to have a fee schedule. So somebody go and get in their dog. If animal control, and that's another thing I want to talk about too, is animal control. If animal control is taking them a dog, the city should be setting the fee schedule of what it's going to cost them to get that dog out.
For the citizens, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It shouldn't be set to a contractor to set that fee. That would be like Consolidated. You know, you've contracted with us. We can't go set a fee schedule to say, hey, we're going to bill you $20 a month. That fee schedule is set by the city.
Yeah.
And this should be the same. It shouldn't be any different.
So you're talking about only for those dogs that are being returned to owners.
Correct. Or I don't know if any fines are being assessed by Hands and Paws to people, or if that's, I don't know how that works, but if it is, that needs to be set by the city also. As far as adoption fees, yeah, that should be 100% on Hands and Paws.
Yeah.
But anything that's going to affect somebody getting their dog back should be set by the city of Othello.
Very valid points. The 10-day rule would be for a dog that they deem as unadoptable. And it, to my knowledge, has never been used. So we haven't had to go down that road where all the animals that Hands and Paws have been able to take custody of and ownership of have been adopted out or fostered out. And so we're very fortunate that we haven't gone down that road where we get back a dog. So
but there's a potential there.
Yeah, it is written that way.
See, and that potential needs to be removed.
And then as far as the fees for the animals, if we find an owner and we haven't got, is it 72 hours, isn't it? 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those fees go to Hands and Paws. But after 72 hours, if an owner isn't found and if there's not, it's a non-licensed animal, then it becomes their property. And that's by RCW.
So If you guys pick up a dog, take it to hands and paws within 72 hours, the owner comes to get it. Any fines gets paid to hands and paws? It doesn't go to the city of Othello?
That's my understanding.
Why would that not go to the city of Othello?
They're incurring the cost for that.
Okay, that's...
That rescue.
their cost is being covered by a $75,000 contract to run that. Those fees of you guys picking that dog up should be a somewhat of a small reimbursement for what it's costing the city to pick that dog up. We're already contracting them for $75,000 for this year to take that dog.
Yeah, that, I understand that point of view big time. Right now, that's the way we've been doing it, even in the previous. That's not an addition or change.
One of the discussions we had during the contract negotiation was, since we were taking on all veterinary care, even during those first 3 days, mm-hmm. that we received those fees.
But those, you're going to pass that on to
the owner. The city received the fee for the tickets that are given out for that, but we receive return to owner fees.
What? How much are those fees?
Well,
how much are those fees that the city is allowing hands and paws to retain?
That, do you have any numbers?
I did not bring that total with me, but for the first initial day that they're there, we do have a fee.
Of how much?
I believe it's $25 for that day. And that's also them getting a dog back that's been vaccinated, dewormed, and flea treated.
That is that included in that $25 fee?
Yeah.
So you're covering vaccinations for that?
Yes, we cover all the medical fees for those dogs from the minute it hits our door.
Yeah, Corey, I think I would just stick with the 5-year contract and let's go.
So the other thing in this contract is, I don't know. I don't like the 5-year fee. I don't like the 5-year contract. We're not getting any incentive with the 5-year contract to get things moving. Things are not moving. We've been doing this for over a year. And what kind of movement have we had? What kind of movement have we had on the shelter? What has been done towards that shelter?
Well, we first had to identify a piece of property to put it on. We did. And then we had to have a design, and we've done that.
Who designed it?
Cameron.
Cameron's on it?
In-house.
And Robin, yeah. You want to take that question, Robin?
We've done the design work on it, and we did it as a temporary facility that'll hold the first 12 dogs, and then we did it as a full that will hold 32, which was the part of the contract. So, well, in designing that, like you said, the $340,000 only goes so far. And when we have to bring in water and sewer to the site and fiber optics, just those costs get excessive. And the piece of property that we looked at has some access issues. So there's the potential of having it somewhere else. So we don't want to build it where we're going to have multiple issues that we have to deal with if then in 5 years we wish that we had put it somewhere else. So we're consolidating and trying to decide where the best place is for this facility. And then we can go out to contract on it.
So I guess I just have one more question. The other thing in the contract here, it says you're going to provide dog training classes. Have you provided any?
We haven't had the facility to be able to provide the classes, but we have brought in a dog trainer on one of the dangerous dogs so that he could go back home.
I just think 5 years is a long contract for, I do. You know, we never signed a 5-year contract with Pet Rescue, and Pet Rescue pretty much provided everything. It's like, here's your money. You know, you take care of it, right down to right down to picking the animals up. And that was the other thing. Our animal control, it's out of control. It's horrible. You know, I see constantly on a daily basis, even in my own neighborhood, there's four or five dogs that run around there all the time. You can go down there almost any time and there's dogs running. You know, I see them in the alleys, I see them on the streets, all over town. And it's just, so something needs to be done about that too. But that's another subject that doesn't have anything to do with this contract. So anyway, that's where I stand at. I'm in a 2-year contract.
Do you have any comments?
When are we going to start with cats? I'm not joking.
They're bad.
They are. They're bad. I've got at least a half a dozen of them every day in my yard.
Does the new design include?
So you don't have very many
facility
then.
For cats.
I mean, there's half a dozen that I recognize every time.
Yeah.
So the initial build of the 12 kennels does not. The full design does. It has
the
a cat.
Full design does. Okay.
So realistically, we are probably 2 to 3 years from a facility where we can house additional dogs and cats. Need some stability with a provider for at least 3 years, if not 6 years, for our problem.
I personally
and I understand your concerns, but we're in a crutch where we have a provider that we've established a relationship with for a year, and they seem to be doing a decent job with the resources that they have available. We probably should extend that relationship at least 3 years till we can figure out where we're going to be.
Yeah, I think that for the police chief and I, accountability was probably the biggest thing. And accountability starts with dog licensing. And as she said, we returned 30 dogs to owners that have been at large with a ticket.
Where's that money for the citation? Does it go to Hands and Paws or does it go to the city? So how are your numbers? Are they
you actually
catching these people? Are you catching the dogs? Because one of the things we were told that we were going to have an officer follow that dog home, and then the officer was going to go bang on the door and say, hey, you know what? Here's your citation.
And that scenario has happened.
It's good. It needs to happen a lot more. Because I'll tell you, two of the dogs in my neighborhood has been running around for years. And it's the same dog. It's an old German Shepherd that's running around there. And I've complained about it. And he's out. And the thing about it is he's out all hours of the day and all hours of the night. He sets my alarm off every night. Every night he sets it off. Yeah, so. It's just, I'm frustrated with it. You know, our services went down from when we, and I'm not bringing you into this at all, but our services, and we knew they would to a point, but the services have went down from when Pet Rescue was picking up animals. And that absolutely floors me because I didn't think
it could get worse.
Pet Rescue. Yeah. I didn't think it could get worse than when we had Pet Rescue, but it has. So.
But we do, I'm not joking. We do need to develop a plan to deal with the feral cat situation that we have here in Othello.
Mm-hmm.
They did a cat roundup one time 5 or 6 years ago with the pet rescue, spayed and neutered them, and then released them back into their
and
area.
We have actually been discussing an idea like that with our veterinarian.
Yeah. But we need to do something because there's a lot of them around and you don't see them until they, you know, out.
So I'll withdraw after what Councilman Barnes said. I'll withdraw my 2 years, but the one thing that really needs to be changed is the discretion of costs and fees. That needs to be a table determined by the city of Othello. Because we can't have a contractor coming in and saying, well, we're $25 today, but next week we're gonna charge you $100. And not that you would, but that potential can't be there. It needs to be a set fee so people know what they're gonna pay. You know, you get pulled over, that fee is set for you were doing 10 miles and over, it's a $100 fine. You know, it's everything else is set. We can't have a contractor with the ability to be changing it. It needs to be set for the people of the city.
Well, that would be easy. Just figure out what she needs to cover, you know.
Well, not necessarily that the city has to collect that money. She can still collect the money.
Right.
But it has to be a set amount.
Sure.
It can't be at the discretion of the contractor.
But it should be negotiated, you know, between the city and the contractor.
Right.
There is code on that, and I've been working with the chief.
Well,
those codes that exactly say what you say.
Yeah, that needs to come out of the contract where the discretion needs to come out.
Could they just say as per code?
And that's what I was thinking about, something like that today.
Yeah.
Like just reference the code.
That'd be great. That would solve that problem.
So if we made a motion to approve the five-year contract with the wording changes to match the code.
Is that your motion?
Yeah.
I'll second it.
Another discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Thank you, Carmen. Now, going to move item 4D under our current business, and that is the Hampton Development Association Notice of Intent. Tonight, our Community Development Director, Ann Henning, will help us walk through that annexation notice of intent. Ann.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So we're just going to pull up the map so we can start there. So we received a notice of intention for annexation. And we'll be sharing that in just a second. There we go. So it was for the three parcels in purple. And so you can see the city limits line is a kind of like bright blue green line. So the notice of intention included those three purple parcels. There is another parcel that would be left as an island. I've labeled it by the owner as Ag 3 Rentals LLC. And so when we get to the discussion about it, but I would recommend that be included and not become an island of unincorporated property if the annexation moves forward. Yes.
Who?
It's Ag 3 Rental LLC. Adan Garza 3 is the LLC owner.
Who?
Adan Garza.
Adan Garza 3.
So as a reminder of what the process is, this is the first step of an annexation where the council looks at the boundaries of the proposed annexation, the zoning, and the indebtedness. Those are the three things you need to look at. And approving it to move forward doesn't mean you're approving the annexation, you're just approving it to move forward. Just so we're all clear on that. So then let's look at the zoning.
What about that part right there, that's in green, the half quarter circle there. Is that in city limits already?
Yes, that's already in city limits. And so that piece is actually, it's one piece already half in city limits. That piece was requested to be annexed in, I forget the date. I think it was 2012. So that one was already annexed in the past, but it's only half, it's the north half of that parcel. And so now this annexation would include the south half. So, yeah, show that one next. So this is the zoning that they would propose, which is C3 commercial in the red and R4 multifamily in the brown. And that matches the comprehensive plan designation, except for that piece that's along Highway 17 on the right side, right there in the bubble. So because the comprehensive plan designates that area as residential, it would have to be annexed as residential, and then they could apply for a comprehensive plan change afterward. But I wanted to let you know that this was kind of their intention for the property, is this kind of zoning. And then if we look at the other map.
Yeah, one thing that would be helpful in looking at this would be to know where the streets are on 14th right now, because there's going to be through streets continuing from the west to the east. And where those streets are going to line up, and because you wouldn't want any commercial, really any commercial businesses beyond like that street that's the farthest south.
Street.
Columbia. I mean, because then you're getting up into behind CBHA and
that's
commercial businesses.
Commercial there.
Huh?
Columbia Street is commercial, I believe, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Columbia Street is commercial. That's there right now. So if they came off of there down Columbia, that would still be commercial.
What was your thought process?
Well, go back
to the last picture.
All of those streets that are on the west side of 14th are going to end up continuing to the east, into the development.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens over there, I mean, those streets are going to go straight through. Like, we haven't finished the one street at the bottom yet. We've still got it sectioned off where it's not complete. But that street will then have to be completed and go through. What I'm saying is from that street there,
Columbia
North shouldn't be zoned commercial.
You're saying the properties closest to the highway should be commercial?
Yes.
Yeah.
But on here, it's hard to tell where all this pink goes, this pink or red that they're using.
Okay, now get into the zoning map.
So this is the future land use map. So the area to the left and above the bubble area is existing zoning. So we've got commercial to the west and high density residential to the north. And then what the comprehensive plan says right now is that pink is commercial, and the yellow is residential.
So 14th is?
Well, there's a big chunk of green that's right. Already residential.
Okay, that's 14th where he's got the arrow.
Yep.
So what they're saying is all the future commercial is down near the highway, but it bumps up a little bit because of the CBHA portion, which is a bigger lot, correct?
This is below CBHA.
So CBHA is that red square.
Yeah. So 14th is that blue dotted line where the arrow is,
yes.
Right there.
That's 14th.
Then the red square next to it is CBHA. And then that property behind CBHA, which I think does that belong to CBHA or?
No. So there is some area behind CBHA that's zoned in the red. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Just vacant right now.
Okay. So that lines up with the current commercial property, and then it comes down to about the level of
Columbia Street.
Do you see?
So if you go back to the other one,
mm-hmm.
Okay, the cost to go over the canal is going to be significant. So there probably is only going to be an access on Cemetery Road up to this development and Columbia. I seriously doubt that one right above that that's on the other side of CBHA between there and that road that's between CBHA and
Wahitas,
that they're going to run that road all the way across the canal. It would have to go across Dan Garza's property, or it would have to take some kind of a jog. And so that's all future planning. That's kind of, I think, a little bit outside the scope of this meeting tonight.
Sure.
But those are all considerations when they want a plat and when they want a final annexation. But the three things that Ann mentioned that we're looking at are the notice of intent to annex the
The geography, the boundaries of the
boundaries, right.
what they're going to be doing their petition based on the boundaries.
And then
the assuming city indebtedness, which the annexation to participate in any city indebtedness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know there was discussion because there's another one that the council approved in notice of intent, and that there was property next to the city that, you know, should be considered. And so I think, as we've explained and the council is aware, we aren't the one, the city isn't the one initiating any of this. This is done by the property owners and or developers. So this is now before they have approached the city. Now they've identified their intent, and again, like any development that's going to have to be developed, there are some obstacles. But City Council, your job tonight is to either approve, say you want more information, approve at another time, or consider it, you know, at another time once you get that additional information. Or decline to approve this. So those are kind of the three options, are they not?
Correct.
And so what kind of utilities do we have? There's no city utilities out in any of this area here. And so I think the city utilities run to the end of CBHA's property on Scutney. They have a water and sewer lines are run to the edge of their property.
I don't believe Scooby has
Columbia oversized, so it can continue out to 17.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, it was oversized. Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up. That's critical. It was oversized so that we could take on this deeper development out here. And I believe the city paid for that upsizing. To allow that to be able to happen. And when you look at logical place for the utilities to run, that's going to be it. It's going to be across there on that future that property here that's going to be annexed. That's going to be the logical place that water and sewer will run. They'll have to go underneath the other way, Spencer. Yeah, they'll have to go underneath the canal. That's the canal in order to reach this other property. So there are some development obstacles they're going to have, but all of it's doable. There's a lot of property to develop there. How many acres is this annexation?
187, I believe, was the Yeah, so the initial proposal is 187.3, and then that Ag 3 rentals is 9.8.
180, 190.
And that includes that half of the circle that wasn't.
Yes, so that's the pink square on this map.
Okay.
I have one question.
Yeah.
There is this area that Lannett's in dispute because they haven't been able to get hold of the landowner. What if they say, I don't want to do this? Are they forced into annexation even if they don't want to be inside the city limits?
No. So what happens after this is that then the proponent gets the petition with at least 60% of the valuation of the owners with valuation, and then we schedule a public hearing. And then at the public hearing, it'll be up to the council to determine what those boundaries should be. You know, you can leave an unincorporated island that's not prohibited. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if that person is adamantly opposed, you could leave them out or you could include them. They could be required to be brought in with the rest of it if that's what the council chooses. So there's some options.
So right now that island out there, that's not part of this, basically part of this discussion, because they're not requesting to be annexed in.
They're not requesting to be annexed, but, correct.
So the boundaries in here, to accept this tonight, we could say that island needs to be included in this, right?
Yes, because you can make between the notice of intent
first
and
right
to accept or reject it,
the annexation, you can make it smaller, you can't make it bigger. So you want to be sure to include everything that you might want to be included.
So I guess
be excluded.
So here's the other question is, if that's just a picture, that's not MapSift or anything, right?
It is MapSift with an overlay.
So can you go up?
Oh, this is a picture from MapSift.
So everything on the other side of the cemetery, that's already in city limits, right?
No. That is outside. So you see that city limits line. So it's city limits to the west and unincorporated to the east of that blue line right there.
Okay. I was thinking that other property was already in the city limits. So that voids that question.
And we do have online representatives of the proponent if you have questions for them.
Is Evan one of them?
Yes.
I have a question. Evan.
Evan, are you able to unmute?
Yep, I'm here. Hi.
Hi. It's Mayor Sean Logan. I wanted to know, what's your time frame for development?
Let's see. So annexation going well, I mean, development could be within the next couple of years. These things don't move quickly. Obviously, there's annexation, there's platting processes, additionally extending utilities. There's a lot of consideration here. So it would definitely be in the timeline of years, a couple of years probably.
And that's to start.
Likely, yeah.
What about the full? Yeah. What about the full build out? What's your timeline on the full build out?
On a project of this size, a full build out could be 10 years or more.
Okay.
I mean, but again, it just depends on well, obviously market influences, demand. But a project of this size could easily extend out to up to 10 years.
Okay, that's all the questions I had. Thank you, Evan.
Sure.
I'm going to need to read each one of these motions and vote on each motion individually. Anne,
you don't have to. It just, you need to be sure that when you're done, you've addressed all three points.
Okay, so like for instance, on number one, motion to geographically modify the proposed annexation by including
Now, above there, you said accept or reject.
So those are your choices. You can modify it. You can accept it as it was proposed. You can modify it. You can reject it.
Okay. So the, I guess the form of the motion then would be whether or not to include that parcel without knowing what the landowner wants to do.
Is that the 7094 parcel? Is that the AG3
yes.
parcel?
Yes.
Okay.
That island.
Evan has a question.
Yeah, actually, just a point of clarification. So our original proposal was to annex the parcels surrounding the AG3 parcel, pointed out as a good planner that generally creating donut holes in the city is not a great way to grow. And so that piece was added as part of the exhibit and as part of this recommendation, more as just a general approach. Typically with annexations, it's a percentage of ownership interest that that would basically control the annexation. In this case, you know, the Hampton LLC group that we're working with represents the majority of the annexation area and value. So again, we haven't been in touch with AG3. We don't know their position, whether they want to or not. There hasn't been any negative that we know of. As good planning, I believe it was presented as, hey, let's include this one in the annexation as well. But again, so far it's not, we don't believe that there's any opposition to, or even we just don't know their position on it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So on the first item, does the council want to include that parcel or not after that explanation from Evan?
And you can also remember it's going to be a public hearing where you would determine the final boundaries. So
we're not locked into it.
Right. But if you exclude it now, you can't add it later.
Okay. So we want to accept, include it in, and then we can always take it out if there is objection to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't include it now, we can't right. put it back in.
Right.
Okay. So I'll make the motion to geographically modify the proposed annexation by including parcel 21004509700794.
I'll second that.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move now to the second motion, which has three parts.
Yes. Motion to require the simultaneous adoption of the proposed zoning as follows. A C3 commercial for parcel 21004510000100. B C3 commercial for approximately 600 feet north of Highway 26. And CR4 residential for the remainder of the proposed annexation. The zoning shall match the comprehensive plan land use designations.
Got a second.
Second.
Okay. So I got a couple of questions I want to ask Ann on this. So first of all, this is a general question on C3 commercial. When the property, is it like residential where if you zone something like R4, then that means you can do all variety of residential?
It's not really like that. And
so zoning on commercial is specific to only things allowed in that zone?
Yes. The C3 commercial is the more large scale commercial. It's not the downtown, it's not the close-in stuff, it's the farther out from town, usually bigger lots, but not necessarily required to be. It's the least restrictive of the commercial zones.
So is that something we want to have by the cemetery?
It would only be for 600 feet along.
So it's just up to Columbia and then that bigger square right behind CBHA.
Surrounding the cemetery is going to be residential.
Okay.
Eventually they're going to propose commercial along Highway 17, the wood about the cemetery, but that's kind of a discussion for a later time.
Okay.
Because right now you just have to match what's in the comprehensive plan.
So the other question then, and we had this discussion earlier, Anne, about we're going to have to include something in the comp plan or change something about our comp plan in order to accommodate this.
To accommodate their eventual request, yes.
Yes, their eventual request, thank you. All right, those are the only questions or comments I had. Council, do you have any others before we vote on the second motion? All those in favor of the second motion requiring simultaneous adoption of the proposed zoning? All those signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'll move to the third motion to require the assumption of existing city indebtedness by the area to be annexed. That's standard.
I'll make the motion to require assumption of existing city indebtedness by the area to be annexed.
Second that motion.
Indebtedness.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Council. Thank you, Evan. Appreciate the input. Now we'll go to item 5, which is our unfinished business. Council, do you have unfinished business tonight you'd like to discuss?
We should probably bring up cats. It's really bad.
Mm-hmm. There's this one cat gets in my backyard because I see it on my Ring cameras.
It's oh, God.
All the night.
If you only have one, you're lucky.
Yeah.
On our Ring camera behind the office, it's constant.
I mean, I've got more than six.
Yeah.
There are six that I recognize every time. I mean, they're there all the time. And they're doing the spraying and they sit underneath the bird bath in the summertime and wait for the birds.
Currently, there's OMCs addressing cat feeding stations and such, so you can't do that. So that is something that's changed in the last 4 or 5 years, because that was a practice by people here in town that they were at feral cat feeding stations. So those have been eliminated. I don't even know there is one right now.
People are doing it.
These are healthy.
They're people's cats.
These are good, healthy cats.
Okay, and so OMC doesn't have a license or at large OMC for cats as it is today.
There's people feeding. They're just putting food out there.
It's different. Yeah, but right now we don't have a licensing fee or a at large for cats.
Would licensing make it easier to clean up the feral cats?
I don't believe so. Feral cats and squirrels are
cats. The squirrels are cat food.
I think when they did do the cat roundups and it was a group of veterinarians actually did that, I do believe it made a difference. And there's some strategies regarding that, whether just to get rid of the feral cats or people's cats, then you might have other vermin come back. We do have rats in town, rats or mice and things like that. So they do serve a purpose in the ecology, but they're overpopulated.
The purpose of collecting them, spading and neutering them was to keep them from, blowing up in population. And they will return to the same area and they will keep other cats out of that area.
Yes.
You know, they fight all the time in the backyard. And
yeah. The feeding stations, when they were doing that, actually let the sick cats live longer. And so I don't believe that that was a good practice.
Yeah.
Any other unfinished business, council?
Well, what did we get resolved there, Mark? Anything? Are we going to have a cat roundup? Can we schedule something?
We just need
something?
To do something. That's all I was bringing up.
Things, events, that can be an event. And those are things that are coordinated through hands and paws.
It sounded like she had been talking to somebody about it.
Can we look into it, get a cost together for it, and then come back?
Well, I can see you guys are now ready to spend some money on it. So
yeah,
that's a good place to start. So we'll find out what that would cost. I think if you really want to address this, you're going to need to do this every year. Mm-hmm. Have a cat roundup. And after 2 or 3 years, you really will begin to make a difference. It'll take a while. And you're not going to round up every cat in town, but you'll work your way through.
It needs to be animal control in general. Because the dogs are out of hand. The dogs are out of control more than cats are. You know, yes, the cats are a problem. I'll absolutely agree with that. But the dogs are just as big, if not bigger, problem than the cats. You know, and it's kind of a backwards way of thinking, because our police officers, I don't want our police officers chasing dogs all day long. I just don't. They've got a lot better and a lot more important things to do. But we need to do something, you know, and I'm hoping with this part-time code enforcement, maybe that helps. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but what we're doing now isn't working. It's just not.
And I feel that too. We field calls on a daily basis for dogs at large.
Mm-hmm.
It is on a daily basis. And so
I 100% believe it.
Yeah.
Are you getting somebody to help, Heather?
Now, the seasonal idea on that was, especially when the weeds start growing, because then they're going to become an issue. And so he was going to concentrate on weeds and garbage and things too.
Okay.
So we have to, it's a timing thing with that.
We need to seriously reconsider that, turning up full time instead of part time. Mm-hmm. And so we could have a full time 40-hour a week animal control officer.
So the full-time 40-hour a week dream, and I'll call it that right now, that would be I would make sure that had a limited commission. And so it could do enforcement just like everything else. The seasonal won't have the limited commission, but I don't need that. We can still write tickets on it with his assistance.
Good. Full-time position, a lot more cost.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say $125,000 a year.
Yeah.
What you're asking the police department to ask us for, not $125,000 a year.
There.
And then you ask yourself, do I want a code enforcement officer, or would I rather spend that money
on an officer,
on another police officer?
We need another code enforcement officer.
Oh.
That is an absolute need. Like I said,
you budgeted for an additional part-time one in the
2025
budget.
Yep.
So let's see how that goes this year, and we'll continue to monitor this. We'll get you some numbers on a cat roundup.
Yeah.
And I'll meet with Chief. We'll discuss animal control. And because I've been getting personal calls as well. So you don't start getting calls until there's a problem. And there is a problem. So, yeah. Other unfinished business, council?
Were you able to identify the driver of that vehicle? Yeah.
That's any new business tonight?
Crazy.
All right. Item seven is council will also receive the police department report for January, building and planning report for January, and our latest lobbyist report. And with no further business to come before the council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:24 p.m.
They didn't want to give it in person? I know.
What's that? The
lobbyist.
Do you see what turn my mic off?